Malevolent Maine is a horror podcast and may contain material not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. A mysterious phone call in the middle of the night. A missing person found after over a year. And the search for a lost friend. These are just some of the major mysteries we'll be bringing you this season, MMers. Before we get started, we just want to take a moment to welcome everyone to Season 3. It's been a while, so we wanted to take a few minutes to recap everything that happened over the course of Season 2. In addition to our normal stories of the odd and unexplained, last year, we began investigating a series of rituals performed by various black magic witchcraft covens across the state. These five covens used charging rituals to imbue various witch skulls with magical energy. They used these to attempt to summon a being known as the Mother Witch, a creature of pure evil with enough power to remake the world. We tracked the witches to the remains of Moortown, the historic site of a 1600s village founded by witches who had escaped Salem, Massachusetts. There, we watched the betrothed, five women who had sold their souls to the devil, sacrifice one of their own, a chaos witch named Sybil. In the end, our junior investigator Mark sacrificed himself to disrupt the summoning spell. In a flash of eldritch light, Mark disappeared, along with the Mother Witch tree and whatever dark energy had been gathering. We don't know if he's dead or somewhere else, but we haven't seen or heard from Mark since Samhain, or Halloween night. If that wasn't enough, we returned to our offices to find a voicemail from Katie Clark, a young woman who went missing during our investigation of an entity known as the Grey Fool, all the way back in Episode 5. Katie was back, and according to her, she'd brought someone, or something, called the King beyond the desert with her. This is Malevolent Maine.
Fear is a powerful tool.
Guys, what was that?
It's just not scientifically possible.
It can't be.
No, seriously, what was that?
You're recording.
I can't explain it.
But what was it?
You may want to phone a friend for this one, MMers. Back in October, we received a phone call at our office from Katie Clark. Katie had been missing since June 2022. It appeared she simply walked out of her apartment in Freeport and disappeared. There was no trace of her anywhere. And by October of 2023, pretty much all hope of finding her alive had dwindled. That all changed on Halloween night, when, unbeknownst to us, while we were investigating the five covens, Katie Clark called us. We played this call at the end of episode 40, but we'll play it again now.
Hello? Is anyone there? This is Katie Clark. I think you've been looking for me. I was gone. I was across the desert. I was with the fool and the king. But I'm back now. And the king beyond the desert, came with me.
We know many of our loyal listeners remember Katie's story quite vividly. For those who don't remember, we covered it in episode 5, The Grey Fool. We've asked Senior Investigator Lucas to summarize it.
The Grey Fool phenomenon has been reoccurring for centuries. During seemingly random times, large groups of people began experiencing dreams of a vast and endless desert filled with bone-like trees and growths. These dreams would happen nearly every night for a period of weeks. Some people would then experience the next phase, which was spotting a dark structure on the horizon, an inverted black pyramid. As some of the dreamers would make their way towards the structure, many more would simply never experience the dreams again. An even smaller group would eventually find their way to the pyramid, sometimes referred to as the Ebony Cenotaph. Once inside, they would find an endless maze of corridors and hallways that seemed to defy logic and physics. If a dreamer was lucky, or perhaps unlucky enough, to get to the center of this maze, they would find a being known as the Grey Fool waiting for them. We believe the Grey Fool is Sanson de Creon, a jester from the 13th century who swore his allegiance to the king beyond the desert, an immensely powerful but enigmatic being. Dreamers were ordered by the Grey Fool to kneel before this king.
During our initial investigation of these strange dreams, we spoke with several people who experienced the visions. One of those, Katie Clark, claimed in her last call to us that she was going away, going with the king beyond the desert. After that, she disappeared. No one had seen any sign of Katie since she walked out of her apartment in the middle of the night and vanished into thin air. Obviously, Katie's most recent call to us was a major breakthrough in her disappearance, and one we fully cooperated with local authorities on. By the time we heard the message and contacted the police, our information was moot. Katie Clark turned herself into the Maine State Police an hour after leaving us the message. She walked into the police station, gave her name, and provided them with her social security number. She had no belongings on her, except the same clothes she was last seen wearing the day she went missing. Her cell phone, driver's license, credit cards, and every other possession had been left behind in her apartment when she disappeared. Luckily, police had a copy of her license and other photographs on file, and were able to positively identify her as the missing woman. Her parents were notified, and she was questioned by police before being released. Of course, in the year and a half since her disappearance, her apartment had been rented away. Katie moved back in with her parents, all the while remaining cryptic on where she had been all this time. We tried our best to arrange an interview with Katie, but, as you can imagine, her family was reluctant to let her speak to anyone. They were still trying to determine whether she was healthy or not, and if she'd been in danger. They were concerned she still might be. Eventually, we did sit down with Katie, but it wasn't until after the new year. In the meantime, we reopened our investigation into the Grey Fool, the Ebony Cenotaph, and the King Beyond the Desert. As we mentioned earlier, the appearance of the Grey Fool usually precedes a great disaster or time of upheaval. The current state of the world seemed to fit the bill, with multiple wars happening around the world and a rising wave of violent acts happening everywhere, including our neighborhoods close to home. However, nowhere in recorded history have we been able to find an example of someone going with the Fool, let alone reappearing. It would seem Katie Clark is the first. If the revenant of Sanson de Creon, or whatever the Grey Fool is a mystery, the being he serves, the King Beyond the Desert, is even more enigmatic. There are virtually no references to such a being. Without a name or time period, there's very little we could go on. We spread out research as wide as we could, but down a man, we were already stretched thin. We dedicated every minute of our spare time to poring through ancient manuscripts, translating lost languages, and combing through eldritch grimoires, hoping to find something we could use to make sense of what had happened to Katie. Meanwhile, Tom had finally secured a meeting with Katie Clark in early January. In the months since her reappearance, she'd kept a low profile. She spent most of her time at home, but the immediate concern for her health had subsided. Her parents accepted her light-on-the-details story and welcomed her home with open arms. They said she was still adjusting to life, but that a lot of the old Katie had come back. They were pleased with her progress, and thought that soon she would be ready to return to the workforce. So, on a weekday in early January, Katie's mother, Gloria, drove Katie to our office so that Tom could interview her.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello.
Can you state your name, just for the record?
Is this a police interrogation?
No. It just helps us with our research.
Okay. My name is Katie Clark.
Thanks. And I'd like to start just by asking you, not about this most recent message you left us, but about the one before it.
Before I left?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, why did you call us? I mean, why not your parents or a friend, someone other than us?
I'd been having dreams.
About the Gray Fool?
That's what you call him, I suppose.
You don't.
I'd been having dreams and had spoken with you about them. I thought you might understand.
Okay, well, where did you go?
I went away.
Right. But can you tell us exactly where you went?
Not sure you'd understand. It was an incredibly personal, internal journey.
Like a spiritual treat?
You could say that, I guess.
Did someone take you?
No. I went of my own free will.
Were you coerced, enticed? I mean, were you promised anything if you went?
No.
Okay, this is gonna sound weird, but did you go beyond the desert, Katie?
It doesn't matter where I went. It only matters what I found.
And what did you find?
Myself. My true self.
But was this in the desert, the upside-down pyramid?
I cannot tell you where I went any more than I already have. I needed to go on a journey. I needed to find myself. I needed to emerge. And when I was ready, I came back.
Okay. So, turning to this past October, why did you call us again?
You needed to know. You told my story. You needed to know the next chapter.
And you said the king was coming with you. Did you mean the king beyond the desert?
He's not what you think.
What?
You talk like you're expecting some boogeyman. That's not the king at all.
Is he a man?
The king is the king.
Is he here now?
Look around. Do you see anyone else here with us today?
Okay. Is he here in Maine or on Earth?
The king is...
What about the being known as the Gray Fool? You told us you saw him in your dreams.
What are dreams but metaphor wrapped in mystery?
So there is no fool?
We are all fools at one point or another. A fool is just someone who is unenlightened.
And are you enlightened now?
Maybe. More than I was.
Are you on drugs, Katie?
No.
Were you on drugs?
No.
Are you in a cult?
No.
Were you in danger?
No.
Are we in danger?
Is there danger in change?
I don't know. I mean, what kind of change are we talking about?
Life is change. Is the caterpillar in danger when it enters its cocoon? When it emerges as something all new and different? Is it in danger?
No, that's just the natural order of things, I think.
Exactly.
At this point, Tom wasn't getting anywhere. Anytime he tried to ask a direct question about the Gray Fool or the King Beyond the Desert, Katie spoke in abstract terms, as if purposely trying to obscure our understanding. Were these real beings, or were they mental constructs? The more they spoke, the more it seemed the whole thing was a metaphor for some incredibly mysterious self-help program. In the end, Tom decided to try an old trick.
Okay, I think we're good. Thanks so much for coming in, Katie. I'd like to get you one of our sweatshirts. Do you mind just sitting tight for a minute?
Not at all. It was good to talk to you, Thomas. The king beyond the desert is sitting on his throne, lost in darkness, all alone. First comes discord weaver flitting through dreams. Then comes enigma scribe more than what he seems. Third is the supplicant ravenous to the bone. Last two emerge as virulent muse to play the final tone.
After that, Katie sat quietly in our interview room. She didn't say anything else. Didn't even move until Tom opened the door. Tom said there was a split second when, even then, she didn't move. Like she was frozen in place. Then she snapped back to normal and smiled widely. He gave her some of our MM gear and thanked her for coming. She told us we could contact her if we had any more questions, but that she was looking forward to moving on with her life. There's a lot to unpack from Katie's interview, and we'll be coming back to it as we continue to process this story. But for now, we want to focus on the rhyme she muttered to herself. In that moment, she believed herself to be alone. This wasn't something she had planned to share, and it's almost like she sang it to herself just to pass the time. We got to work trying to find any trace of this recorded anywhere else. Internet searches, both of the surface and dark varieties, turned up nothing. Nor did any of our numerous books and print materials. As near as we could tell, this was an original rhyme. And yet, it had the feel of something more significant.
It sounds like a nursery rhyme, though one completely unfamiliar to us. Many of us learned many of these famous poems as kids, but they all tend to have a darker meaning. Many believe Ring Around the Rosie is a reference to the plague, and Jack and Jill could be about King Louis XVI of France and his wife, Marie Antoinette, who are both beheaded during the French Revolution. Katie's poems follow a simple rhythmic pattern and rhyme scheme, but it contains a number of ominous words. Aside from the King Beyond the Desert, the four beings mentioned, the Discord Weaver, Enigma Scribe, Ravenous Supplicant, and Virulent Muse, all have an extremely dangerous feel to them.
At this time, we don't know what or who these beings are, or how they connect to Katie. But it's hard not to draw some connections. Katie says the Discord Weaver flits through dreams. To flit is to move lightly or swiftly. Think of birds moving between trees, for example. It appears to be talking about someone who can jump or travel through dreams. We instantly began to think of the Gray Fool. The fool appeared in people's dreams, seemingly testing them. As we mentioned earlier, as each stage of the dreams progressed, from bone desert to inverted pyramid, fewer and fewer people began experiencing the dreams. Somehow, some way, certain people were deemed worthy of progressing, with Katie ultimately being chosen for whatever came next. We find it hard to believe that she went on some sort of spiritual reawakening journey or a walkabout. People don't completely disappear from the face of the planet to figure themselves out. Whatever happened to Katie, we're sure the Gray Fool had something to do with it.
Discord means disagreement or lack of harmony. One who weaves discord is sowing disagreement. We know the Gray Fool asked those he encounters to kneel before the King beyond the desert to swear allegiance to him. Katie talked a lot about change. What if this change from, I don't know, free will to submission to the King or whatever is sort of like a disagreement? Most people don't follow this King, right? So swearing allegiance to him would be disagreeing with the normal, standard way of thinking.
It's an intriguing thought. If the Gray Fool is the Discord Weaver, his appearance 2 years ago would seemingly imply that the others who came after him, the Enigma Scribe, the Ravenous Supplicant, and the Virulent Muse, may already be here, or are on their way. We also need to consider what connection these four have with the King beyond the desert. We know from our earlier investigation that the Gray Fool, or Discord Weaver, either leads people to the Ebony Cenotaph, or at least waits for them there. When they make it through the maze inside, another sort of test, he asks them to kneel before the king. A listener of ours, Joe from Standish, wrote us this back when we first investigated the Grey Fool, before his untimely passing. Joe made it sound as if he had rejected the command. If so, he was found unworthy, and as far as we know, didn't dream of the desert, the fool, or the pyramid again. What if Katie Clark did submit before the king beyond the desert? What if, unlike Joe, she pledged her allegiance to this being? In her last call to us before she disappeared, Katie said she had to go with the fool and the king. If she agreed, if she swore her loyalty to the king beyond the desert, then she somehow passed the fool's tests. She was deemed worthy and was taken away somewhere. That begs the question, was she the only one? We spoke with several people at the time who claimed to have dreams of the Bone Desert, which seems to be the first stage of the trial. Many had the dream several times before they simply faded and never came back. Several others, including someone we only knew by their username, Cystis Cat, got to the next stage, finding the inverted black pyramid, the Ebony Cenotaph, at the edge of the desert. Of the people we talked to, only Katie Clark and Joe managed to find their way to the heart of the maze inside the structure. Of those two, only Katie made the choice to submit. But could there be others we don't know about? Our show was relatively new when we started our investigation, and not everyone is as open to discussing recurring dreams as we are. According to reports, there were 98 people who went missing from Maine in 2022. The vast majority of those were later found or their remains recovered. Still, that leaves 24 people who simply vanished. One of those, Katie, has since returned, bringing the total number down to 23. 23 missing people from Maine. It seems unlikely that all of them would be victims, for lack of a better term, of the Grey Fool and his enigmatic master. But could some of them be? If even one or two of them also submitted to the Grey Fool's demands, where are they now? Will they return as Katie did? And if so, what information could we gain from talking with them and corroborating their stories with the one Katie shared with us? And we know that the Grey Fool phenomenon is not limited to Maine. We found records going all the way back to the 15th century, indicating that people all over Europe experienced similar dreams. How many missing people all over the world have pledged their loyalty to the king beyond the desert? Our path is clear. With Katie now back, we've got to continue this investigation. We've got to see if other missing persons have returned and hear what they have to say about their mysterious disappearance. We need to learn more about this so-called king beyond the desert. What does he want? Why did he take Katie? And what of her new message to us? That he's come back with her. If the Discord Weaver, the being we know as the Grey Fool, has made an appearance, what does it mean for the other three mentioned in Katie's rhyme? Who, or what, are the Enigma Scribe, the Ravenous Supplicant, and the Virulent Muse? It's probably time to acknowledge that because of the ongoing nature of this investigation, we may be altering the format of our show just a little bit. In past seasons, we've used the anthology format. Each episode tells the complete story of one of our investigations. Because this is still an ongoing investigation, and because of the serious nature of what we feel may be some sort of otherworldly threat, especially in light of what happened with Mark last October, we've decided to bring you regular updates as we encounter them. Not every episode will be dedicated to our study of the King Beyond the Desert. We still have plenty of other stories of the odd and unexplained, but as we find new information, as we hopefully solve this mystery, we're going to share what we find. At Malevolent Maine, we've always believed that information is power, and shared information is far, far stronger than secrets. To that end, our producer Megan, who has been working tirelessly, mostly behind the scenes, to make sure this podcast comes out on time, has agreed to take a more active role in our investigations.
Listen, I don't know much about the paranormal or supernatural or whatever. At least, I didn't until I started working with the guys. But because of the work I do on the show, I've seen things I can't explain. Ghosts, witchcraft, the stuff with Mark. I can't deny that there is something else going on out there. Things people don't know about. So, yeah, I'm willing to help however I can.
Which brings us back to the King Beyond the Desert. While this is not a uniquely Maine problem, it is intriguing that so many of the cases we've uncovered, not just personally, but in various reports and records dating back through history, take place here. The majority of encounters with the Bone Desert, Ebony Cenotaph, and the Gray Fool seem to happen to citizens of our home state. We found reports, either firsthand or historical, of 139 dream encounters that we believe are connected to our case. 99 of them are from Maine. What is it about Maine that is so essential to this phenomenon? We first considered geography. Maine is a temperate region known for cold, snowy winters and mild summers, but we couldn't help looking for a connection with the Bone Desert. Maine has only one desert, the aptly named Desert of Maine in Freeport. However, this so-called desert was created in the 1800s through poor farming practices and overgrazing by sheep, well after our earliest reports of the Gray Fool dreams. And this isn't even a true desert, as it receives over 50 inches of precipitation a year, well above the threshold of less than 10. There's nothing in early settler history about a black pyramid, nor in any Native American myths or legends. But, as is often the case when you start researching mysterious topics, you often find yourself falling down a rabbit hole. It was while we were attempting to find something relating to the indigenous history of Maine that we came across something we believe may be a connection to our current case. Here's Lucas to explain.
In 1957, amateur archaeologists discovered a silver coin at a dig site along Penobscot Bay. This location, known as the Goddard Site, was an ancient Native American settlement at Naskiag Point in modern-day Brooklyn, Maine. Many historical oddities have been recovered from the site, including pottery from as far away as New Jersey and Nova Scotia, and worked copper from Europe. However, one of the oddest and so far unexplained artifacts was the silver coin with strange markings on its face. The coin was originally misidentified as a British penny from the 12th century, but later it was determined to be of Norse origin, minted somewhere between 1065 and 1080 AD. A hole had been punched to the coin, indicating it was most likely being worn as a pendant.
That Christopher Columbus was the first non-indigenous person to discover America has been known to be false for quite some time. There is evidence of Viking presence in Greenland, Nova Scotia, and some suggest as far west as Minnesota, centuries before Columbus landed in the Bahamas. The Goddard site was a known trading ground between local tribes, which may explain why such a variety of artifacts had been found there. A trader from another tribe may have brought the European copper or New Jersey pottery, traded from somewhere else, to the site in Maine. Many experts, however, believe the silver coin, known as the Maine penny, is evidence that Vikings had at least a temporary settlement along the main coast. Which brings us to Leif Erikson.
Leif Erikson was a Viking explorer, the son of Erik the Red, founder of Greenland, who, among other things, was said to have established a settlement at a place he called Vinland, or Wineland, because of its abundance of wild grapes. Vinland is generally believed to be somewhere along coastal North America, typically in the Gulf of the St. Lawrence River region of Canada, roughly 270 miles from the main border. Several reports detail how Leif Erikson established a winter settlement, Leifsbudir, and how for several generations he and his descendants lived in the area.
For a handful of years, Leif Erikson and his people lived along the eastern coast of Canada, and there are several stories of their encounters with the indigenous people of the area, which they called the Skraeling, or Wretched Ones. Many historians believe that Leif Erikson's primary goal was exploration, that, like his father before him, he had the desire to find new lands and seek places that didn't exist on any Viking map. However, more recent sources indicate that they may have had an ulterior motive for sailing to the lands far west of their settlements in Greenland and Iceland. Stories in Maine claim that Erikson and 30 of his men spent one summer and fall exploring the land south of Leifsbudir, looking for a suitable place. This place, of course, would have been the main coastline. There's very little indication that Erikson and his crew encountered any Native Americans at this time, but there have been claims that they found whatever it was they sought on one of the small islands off Penobscot Bay. The theory that Leif Erikson and his men encountered the local Penobscot tribe and traded with them at the Goddard site is a tempting one, but if these two groups were trading partners, one might expect more than a single silver coin found at the settlement. Still, this seems an enticing proposition, if not for the runes imprinted on the main penny itself. Here's Lucas again.
The silver coin is nearly identical to other Olaf Kyr coins from the time, but it had one very noticeable difference. On the back of the coin was an upside-down triangle with the runes for Utlegrus carved into it. Utlegrus translates roughly to the exile.
Here's what we know. Leif Erikson was looking for something when he explored the main coast. The coin, which was discovered in the area he was known to be in, dates from the proper time period. It was worn as a pendant on a necklace, and it was marked with the words, "The Exile," something unique to other coins minted from this time. What if Leif Erikson was not searching for something, but for a place to leave something? Or more accurately, someone. We believe there was someone on Erikson's boat, most likely a prisoner who had been exiled from the known Viking establishments. Erikson and his crew eventually found a suitable prison for this exile and left him on one of the Penobscot Bay Islands. Victorious, Erikson and his crew sailed back to their camp, Leifsbudir, and eventually back to Greenland. Somehow, though, this exile survived and found a way off his island prison into the mainland. Maybe he traded with the indigenous people he found there, bartering his only possession, the silver coin that marked his fate. It's possible this exile was then absorbed into a tribe, or went off on his own, or perhaps was even killed. I recently spoke with an elderly gentleman from the Penobscot Nation. He asked not to be named in this podcast, but he did tell me a story he had heard from his grandfather, who had in turn heard it from his grandfather, going back as far as his people could remember. It was a secret story, one that was not told in the open, and it involves the One Obuthlet. The word itself means one who loses himself, but in this case it means the one who is lost, or the one who is separated. According to the ancient legends, this person, whose name was purposely forgotten forever, roamed the main coastline, apart from all people, though allowed to interact with them, He was a foreigner to everyone, and no tribe or people called him one of their own. No one knew where he came from, only that he looked like Wobaskodon, or cold white frost. According to the man I spoke with, Juana Bothlet had been some sort of king or leader. But to follow Juana Bothlet was to follow danger and fear. Any who looked this man in the eye would see only madness and death. So Juana Bothlet traveled alone from village to village, trading what he could for food or clothing, friend to no one. In time, the Penobscot people came to believe he was an evil spirit or a ghost. They began to leave offerings for him on the edge of their settlements so Juana Bothlet would take what he needed and move on. In time, he disappeared altogether, though the stories told he still roamed the woods. It was said Juana Bothlet was known by the silver circle he wore around his neck. While this seemingly confirms the history of the main penny, what does all of this have to do with the King Beyond the Desert, the Grey Fool, and Katie Clark? The obvious answer is the upside-down triangle on the main penny. This could be a depiction of the ebony cenotaph. Of course, triangles have a long history, from pyramids to witchcraft symbolism and beyond. This isn't by any means a clear connection. However, the elder I spoke with added one last piece of the story of Juana Bothlet. He claimed that his own ancient ancestor had been the last person to speak with Juana Bothlet. He came upon the outcast one day while fishing near a stream. The man's ancestor exchanged a few pleasantries with the outcast, but that was all. After fishing together in silence for a while, the man began to grow more and more nervous. Finally, Juana Bothlet pulled in his line and made as if to move off. The man's ancestor gathered his courage and asked where Juana Bothlet was bound. "Beyond," the outcast said. "Against my will, to where the sun has dried the land to dust, to the throne I was promised, though it will not be my last." Then, the strange man walked off into the forest and was soon lost among the trees. One who was lost from his companions, a mad king exiled from his home, and a desert beyond our realm of understanding. Could Juana Bothlet, the Viking exiled by Leif Erikson, be the king beyond the desert? We'll keep looking for answers.
You've reached the Malevolent main offices. Please leave a message after the beep. And remember, stay safe out there.
Hey guys, it's me. Just don't come looking for me, okay? I'm all right. I'm okay. I need some time. Please, just don't come for me. Just don't, okay? Don't.
Stay safe out there, Maine.